with. So it's going to be really exciting. So, yeah, that's all, I guess.
And I have one small human rights piece that I wanted to share with you. It's regarding girls working as domestic help in Haiti, who are virtually considered as slaves. Tens of thousands of children in Haiti, most of them girls, are working as domestic servants in conditions that amount to slavery. The human rights organization such as Amnesty International is launching a campaign to press the government of Haiti to protect child workers from abuse and exploitation. Many Haitian families, too poor to support their children, are forced to send them to work as domestic help. The children, most of them girls, end up working long hours cleaning, cooking, fetching water for the household, and looking after other children in the family. Only a minority receive any education at all. The vast majority are deprived of basic rights, including the right to adequate health care and food. Most child domestic workers in Haiti live as virtual slaves, said Geraldo Ducos, Haiti researcher at Amnesty International. They work in inhuman conditions, suffering violence and abuse by their hosts only for a plate of food. UNICEF estimated that there were as many as 100,000 girl domestic workers in Haiti in 2007. The UN Special Rapporteur on Contemporary Slavery has described conditions in which the children live as modern form of slavery. If you would like to learn more about it, please visit Amnesty website and learn more about the child slavery issues, especially regarding girls in developing countries. So that's Sferio for today. Thank you so much for listening to us, and we'll join you guys again next Friday at 6 p.m. Have a good weekend, everyone.
مرحبا. مرحبا في Music for Human. I am Dr. Janis Sakran and I welcome you. Tonight with none other than Peace Child Peter.
Hey man.
BCB, welcome.
Thanks man, it's been a while since I've been here.
It has, BCB, and BCB of course, for those of our listeners who are unaware, is a contemporary tea master.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say master, you know what I mean, man? It's like, I just make tea. That's what I do. I've been doing it for 40 years now.
Master is sort of an arbitrary term.
I guess. It's, I don't know, it sounds so conceited to me, man.
Well, that's true. I mean, similarly, doctor is very arbitrary.
Yeah, it doesn't really mean anything, right?
Not in the absolute. But, well, needless to say, I like PCP's tea very much.
Thanks, man.
And it is most excellent. I would also like to welcome Aurora, a vocal therapist.
Thank you for having me again, Dr. Jalis.
I always... forget, but it really is therapist.
Yes, it's a it's vocal therapist.
It's so wonderful to have you with us.
It's wonderful to be here. This is an incredibly enlightening hour for me and hopefully for the audience members.
We are also pleased to welcome, for the first time, Signor Fromage. Signor Fromage, welcome.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Bonsoir.
And Signor Fromage, how did you come to be with us this evening?
I was just passing by and saw the light.
And seeing the light, you just walked... in.
To the light. Yeah.
I think that's a wonderful metaphor for our entire life.
Yeah, man, especially since it's starting to get cold here.
We are like moths drawn to the flames of life and opportunity.
Or like crabs drawn to large pots of water.
That are warm.
Warm.
Yeah.
The tea of life is
the tea of joy.
The tea of joy,
yeah.
which is formed by an infusion
of tea leaves and heat.
And whatever else happens to be available.
Twigs.
We also have, I believe, on hold on the line here, Dr. Zina Pfannkuchen, if that's at all possible. Let's see if it is possible. Dr. Pfannkuchen?
Hello.
Yes, marhaban.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome once again. Dr. Pfannkuchen is a specialist in Marxian, or is it Marxist neologistics?
I would say Marxian neologism, in the sense that it derives from a tradition of engaging with Marx, but is not wedded to Marx having ownership or custody of all of my thoughts. I would say Marx is at the vanguard of a wave of thinking, but he's not everything in neologism. Indeed, the crux of neologism is to continue the new, to develop new words and new ways of thinking for each subsequent theoretical generation.
I see, and we carry this forward like a vine on which is knotted a number of messages, and a very long cat whose head is in the coming generation and whose tail is in this generation. And by yanking on the tail of the ages, we are able to transmit meows to future children.
I like this metaphor of the knot, and I think that in your understanding, the topology of this knot would have a line, a single line that goes in one way and out the other. But indeed, there are many forms of knots aside from this simple overhand knot. Perhaps time is knotted more like a bowline with a loop that bends back onto itself. Or perhaps time is as beautiful as something like a double coin knot, these fancy sailor's knots, these decorative knots that can have so many layers that mathematicians try to understand their topology as with highly complex theories. Perhaps that is how we shall understand the movement and knotting of time.
Well, in my studies, when I was teaching myself about resonances and frequencies, I came upon this theory of time, which supposed, in my mind, I developed the idea that time is like a cloth, a fluid cloth that you can dip in the river, and that you can enrich yourself in it, that you can be soaked up into it, that while perhaps we are drifting upon this river with the cloth, that through our minds we can travel along the cloth, through it, and its fractal-like woven form.
I love this understanding of the cloth, and it reminds me that indeed the word textile comes from the same Latin root of textere, from which we get the word text and texture, and that all of our words, these neologisms with which I work on a daily basis, are indeed a kind of textile, and that we can weave not only with words but also with threads.
Well, apart from, you know, just simple vocabulary, I find it incredibly enriching to allow your mind to drift through the ages and to allow your spirit to be embodied in the different floating tendrils through time.
Yeah, I'm also not too sure that the knotted rope metaphor is accurate, in spite of myself having introduced it. I think maybe a more apt metaphor here would be more like a clump of liver that has been boiled.
Would there be bile running through this liver?
I think that we cannot exclude the possibility of bile.
Well, hopefully, if all things go as planned, the gallbladder will remain unperturbed.
I believe that some people might say that Napoleon was the gallstone in the bladder of history. That seems, in my opinion, an updating of Hegel's point about this matter.
I think that I've never heard the gallbladder analogy for Napoleon, but I have in fact heard that previous presidents were referred to as, I believe, pimples on the derriere of history, which I also think is excellent as metaphors go.
Well, and I believe that works better, because while one's posterior may have multiple imperfections or pimples, there can only be one gallstone.
But who's to say, when you get right down to it, that pimples are imperfections? Aren't they? Aren't they just a sort of a tool that the body uses?
So it is its own thing.
I've heard they can be very enlightening, very enriching to have.
Sure, they serve some purpose, but many things are there only for suffering. For instance, our loneliness here, the four of us together, is a metaphor, I think, for suffering. So if you'd like to relieve our suffering and pop the zit, call our number and our operator will connect you. 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
Hi, marhaban.
So welcome. Thank you for at least, you know, squeezing the appropriate spot.
I'm pretty good at that. I was listening to you talking about gallbladders, and I was inspired to call in. I'm reading a little bit about the gallbladder right now. You guys been reading, like, what's in the news about the gallbladder?
No, I certainly have not. Please share.
You guys don't read the news. Richard Dawkins wrote a book a little while ago, about 10 years ago. It's called The Blind Watchmaker. And not many people ever read it. It really never saw the light of day until he started doing the reality show spots, going on C-SPAN a lot. And what it's basically about is people have no idea how the gallbladder evolved. And there's been theories like, maybe a gallbladder was its own organ outside of the human. And the humans, at some point, ingested gallbladders, and, you know, the gallbladder became a symbiotic part of the human being. But basically, what Richard Dawkins says is the gallbladder is, no matter where it came from, it's very important to us because it's how we tell time. It's the blind watchmaker of our body. And there's, like, an actual, like, working clockwork somewhere deep in there. So that's the theory, at least.
So the theory then being that there are actually mechanical gears in the gallbladder?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think it's called gall mechanical? Gall chemical? Nah, maybe not. Definitely, though. I mean, the stones basically are in the shape of discs. I don't know if you've ever passed a gallstone, but when they come out, they're really sharp. It's kind of like a Yakuza Shiriza blade. I don't know what the word is, but it's really quite sharp.
Yeah, I've never passed gallstones, but kidney stones are quite jagged.
Kidney stones. Yeah, kidney stones are for pansies. The real stuff is the gallstones. They're pretty big.
Hey, what's up?
Yeah, my experience with kidney stones was quite painful until I really was able to meditate through it. And
yeah, how old were you? Like eight.
I was 43, I think, with my first kidney stone.
Did you get this kidney stone when you were on vacation in San Francisco?
No.
When you were at a parade for Puerto Ricans?
No, I was doing one of my common journeys just alone from Cairo to a small
South
village.
South Cairo.
And,
it was
an extremely painful experience. I'm not sure if any of my co-hosts here have experienced passing very stones.
I've not had the opportunity, but women have our own version of pain.
Yeah, I found it to be ultimately a very spiritual experience, and not unlike life itself.
This, it goes right back to the loneliness, the pain of loneliness. Pain is a model builder of life.
Well, indeed, passing a gallstone or a kidney stone is often compared in terms of its level of pain to the pain of childbirth. So, Doctor, it is appropriate that you should say that it is like life itself, because indeed the act of bringing into this world life itself is a very similarly painful experience.
I've always found it interesting how people could measure those sorts of levels of pain. I mean, as a vocal therapist, usually you can hear pain through the voice of a person, but you can never tell if one level of excruciating pain is the same as the level of excruciating pain for another.
I could imagine that that voice itself would be used to measure pain, to, you know, the level of one's, you know, scream.
I would beg to disagree on this. I think that silence can speak as well as voice when we're talking about pain, actually.
I mean, I think that's an appropriate point, that it may be difficult for a comedian to continue telling humorous anecdotes while under severe pain, and so silence in their case may indicate pain. In I'm not sure who is doing the measurements, but an interesting technique may be to attempt to possess the person experiencing pain.
Well, that's a really interesting thought. The closest I've come to possessions in my vocal therapy, and I've dealt with a lot of patients who are dealing with massive internal pain. I haven't really possessed them, but we've had joint meditation sessions, and you can feel their aura. You can feel the throbbing, just red, angry aura about them that details such a deep level of pain that is almost excruciating to be around.
I appreciate this comment about pain transcending the individual body, and as a Marxist, I would bring up that pain and violence itself are not limited to physical bodily harm, but also include things like structural violence, the violence of capitalism, the violence that does, and the pain that causes on individual workers in our society and in our political economic situation. And in this moment of late capitalism, the structures are very good at numbing and hiding the pain that they cause, but it's still there. And I appreciate the work of transdermal mediation and vocal therapists to bring out and sense these structures of pain.
So perhaps if enough people were feeling a similar sensation, a similar quality of pain, it could manifest in a very physical form as a joint blob, so to speak, of pain.
That one might light a fire with the pain of, say, a group of students. Is that what you are indicating there?
Well, I'm not sure if it could be any use as fuel, although in the past fuel has been derived from the sufferings of thousands.
Yeah, I imagine to myself that various artists may have caused such great amounts of pain in their audience that such physical manifestations would, you know, had the audience sufficient psychic training, could have caused a variety of natural or seemingly natural disasters.
Perhaps Hurricane Katrina was caused by an incredibly horrendous version of cats.
I'm not sure if anyone has done a study to discover correlations between, you know, very, very poor concert reviews and natural disasters. I mean, it is well understood that some natural phenomena were not present before we were present.
Perhaps this thing has manifested itself in the form of global warming. The heat of our pain is sort of baking the earth.
I mean, ironically, is it not also possible that the earth is simply experiencing a fever of love?
Well, have to observe not only the poor concert reviews, but also the population booms throughout history.
Well, population has simply grown exponentially since, you know, certainly in modern times, you know, there has been no great reduction in the number of people living.
That leads me to another thought, that perhaps we are, since our consciousness is so shared and so fluid between all of us, that because we are overpopulating the earth, each of us has a smaller and smaller portion of our own individual consciousness to contribute to the whole.
So the idea there is that there is a certain fixed amount of spirit matter that is shared by all living beings, or by all people specifically.
Well, certainly all living beings should be included in that. I have had marvelous meditation experiences with my cats. You can sense the aura of every creature around you.
That may explain the desire of some who claim spiritual enlightenment to attack many others and to really try to reduce, you know, to encourage winnowing.
Well, at the same time, though, that sort of spiritual greed can never end well.
Why?
Because in the harming of others, you harm your own spirituality. You can only be truly whole when you let live and you live yourself. When you allow your desires and your thoughts and your emotions and your sense of morality to ring true within and without, with using your actions and your meditation to reach out to others.
Señor, what is your view on all of this?
You know, I come from a very small country in Europe called Czechoslovakia, and there we have not a lot of access to technologies, and all these things are kind of grounded in our mind. And when I came here in the United States of America for the first time 7 years ago, I found that not a lot of people had all these things in mind, and I'm happy to be here tonight to hear that not everybody is lost here.
Well, I was particularly moved by the story that you gave, that you were wandering, and I took this to mean you were wandering spiritually, and you saw the light, and you moved towards the light.
Yes, that is very related, I think, to dreams I've had recently involving a lot of elephants. And it was very hard for me to get rid of them until I understood what it really meant to me, and about myself needing some guidance somewhere. Maybe these ideas we are talking about are these elephants.
The elephant, of course, symbolizing age,
the power.
And society,
mm-hmm.
and valuable things that are difficult to harness.
Mm-hmm. Maybe one day I will dream that I am actually sitting on the elephant, and that day I will be saved, I think.
Or perhaps feeding among them.
So actually consuming the elephant?
No, consuming with the elephant.
So I see, so a joint experience of consumption.
It's interesting, though, the voice of the elephant. This is why the elephant has always been renowned as a sort of wise creature. That the voice of the elephant, its resonances are akin to those of humans who have access to the seven planes, who have reached that level of enlightenment.
And to myself, the elephant really represents wisdom from a different perspective, because they have a very distinctive, very leathery skin, which reminds one of an ancient person who has spent many years in meditation and has therefore lost the customary texture of his skin.
And that is a bit of a more physical, as a dermatologist, that would be the detail that you look for, perhaps people with other specialties.
Well, I should say quickly that I bristle somewhat at the term dermatology. I really prefer transdermal mediator.
Oh, I apologize.
I think it's important to realize that there is communion occurring, that it is a group effort, that it's not that I come to you as a victim of some horrible scarring and say, you know, I will treat the scarring. It's together we have to treat it.
So it's a sort of understanding of the scar?
Precisely, precisely.
I think that the scar interrupts the skin in the way that we have to interrupt other organs, such as eyes or the vision, to interrupt it in the same way that visual awareness interrupts a kind of proprioception. That is to say that our orienting abilities combine the resources of two different planes of experience, one being the synesthetic system, in which we cross-reference a systemic duality, and we're always positional and moving along Euclidean paths. And then the other one being something that's more vectorial, a tendency plus a habit of proprioception that helps us feed into our visions, and that we always fold along these experiences into this two-dimensional or two-realm mode of experience.
Well, Dr. Pfannkuchen, I think that while proprioception is commonly regarded as one of the hidden senses, I think an even more deeply hidden sense is what I have called, and my colleagues inexplicably refuse to call, conproception, which is the ability to forget where one is and to lose one's bearings. I think the ability to forget is what makes us so valuable. One of the things that makes people so distinctive.
Yes, I'm reminded of a particular kind of injury to the brain, or condition of the brain. I don't want to pathologize it by calling it an injury. It's called blindsight, in which it's a non-conscious visual perception, often due to some kind of injury to the brain or trauma to the brain, in which people may consider themselves totally blind.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if you put something in front of them, they'll say that they don't see anything. But then if you ask them to reach for it, they go directly to the object. So on some level, they're completely aware of where objects are around them, even if they say, oh, I can't see anything.
Mm.
Is this similar to the idea of contraception?
I think it sort of generally indicates the possibility of spiritual blindness, that one may be able to actually sense the pain of one's neighbor, and perhaps even naturally to heal it or to empathize with it on a very high level. But we insist on spiritual blindness, and our brains simply comply.
I think that spirituality and emotion are necessary in considering any aspect of sensory perception, that we can't ignore those elements that inform and inflect all of the senses, that life is directly and qualitatively perceived, but that it's conveyed through spiritual and emotional context. And without that, we have no, there is no such thing as a pure sense.
And
similar to pure tones, in a way, it is almost impossible for a human to emit a sound that has no overtones or no higher frequency sounds. But I've often left patients with a flaw in their voice because it so colors their voice in a beautiful way that even though they perceive it as a flaw, it is actually, in the end, it's a beauty mark. It's a wonderful contrast of different little peccadillos in each person's voice.
Yeah, you remind me of a lover that I took many years ago, who was, had the unusual misfortune of being very perfect, and at one point in our relationship, we had an argument, and this was in Africa, and she was hit by a rhinoceros, and the resulting mark was in the shape of a heart on her shoulder. So it was very mild, and she was fortunate to have not been injured more seriously, but she had fallen from perfection, and I was unable to love her the same way, and unfortunately we parted ways.
Well, in a way though, Dr. Jalas, the mark would be a reminder of experiences that you both had, gone through together, that be a reminder of a time when she was not 100% perfect, which would allow you to view her as a human, as a fellow.
Well, I think part of her appeal was that she seemed to pass through time without having been changed. So I knew her for a period of 12 years. And in that time, I certainly could see that she did change, but the changes appeared to me to be almost the way that a statue would change. Her features gradually became softer, but it would be hard looking to be able to say that she had grown by a decade. Her age certainly appeared to be the same, but this mark suddenly, every time I saw the mark, it made me realize that she was very mortal and very fragile, and I could no longer look her in the shoulder without being reminded of that moment and the danger that we felt, and the energy of the argument.
Maybe that has something to do with the fact that when you were looking at her, you were maybe rather looking at an image rather than the person itself. An image that doesn't change much over time and has to be perfect always.
It's like the image that a teacher sees of their student. Mm-hmm. No matter how the student may grow, they always see that child from the moment that they stepped into the classroom. Well, if you would like to share an impression with us, our number is 617-253-8810. Welcome back.
Oh my God, thank God. It's me again. I've been kidnapped and I need your help. I don't know where I am and I don't have any food and I'm bound and gagged on the floor of a big room.
Cutler, if you were gagged, how are you able to speak?
That's question one. And question two is, why are you calling a New Age radio station? Shouldn't you be calling the police?
I'm bound. I can't call anything other than my most recent call.
Huh.
I just had to send it, and I shouldn't have called you guys before.
Well, caller, it's so wonderful that you are able to reach us and will be able to...
You know, I think this has to mean something that, you know, you could only call us. It's like it was meant to be. Maybe we're just supposed to lead you through this time here.
What do I do?
I think that the first step would be to accept your situation and...
I can't accept it. I don't have any food. I can't survive here.
So one of the first lessons of spirituality is that one must learn the value of fasting.
I'm so hungry. It's only been an hour. I'm so hungry. I should have had two peanut butter jelly sandwiches. How much longer till the cops come? You guys called the cops, right?
You know, Doctor, this reminds me of that point you made with the suffering being an integral part of the human experience here. I think our caller is really learning that. It must be amazing for you right now, caller.
I'm in a big dark room. I can't really see anything around me, but I think there's a moose head on the wall and a skee ball table. I think it might be a David Buster's. I'm so hungry. It smells like popcorn shrimp everywhere. It's like I'm in a bucket of popcorn shrimp. I can't eat it.
The suffering has brought a sudden meaning to the caller's life. It's so difficult to really reach out spiritually, but even this brief moment, the stomach yearns to be filled. And the caller, as he mentions, was so recently eating. Clearly the need is not physical, it is spiritual.
And I'm so hungry for shrimp.
And filling that void with shrimp, it's a passing thing.
I would pay $20 for a single shrimp right now if it was brought in, right?
Caller, you must embrace this emptiness. Allow the gong of purity to fill the void with spirituality and music and loud sounds.
Did you order me some popcorn shrimp to where I am?
Yes, it's on the way, caller. It's on the way. We're sending it spiritually.
We're sending a spiritual nugget.
I want real shrimp.
Real. That's the point we're trying to get across here, caller.
It is more
shrimp?
More real than reality.
I want some pizza.
You know,
I have
actively wandered through several uninhabited areas in my time. And one of the most beautiful things was to allow the hunger to consume me within and to light my spirit on a sort of fire.
I thought you guys said that you said shrimp.
You must be able to receive the shrimp, caller.
My mouth is open right now.
But is your third eye open?
Yeah, we will throw spiritual...
No, that's not how I eat shrimp. I eat shrimp with my mouth.
open your spiritual mouth.
I believe
mouth.
That if the caller is allowed to suffer through this alone, that perhaps he will gain a sort of enlightening, sort of wonderful experience.
Well, I think
I do have my dog with me, and he's looking more and more delicious by the second. He's curled up like a little shrimp. Oh. How do you get a dog? Please have a look it up for me.
Well, first you have to be unbound. But I think we're going off topic here, caller. The point of the conversation was to talk about what other appetites one must have in order to live a fulfilled life. And one appetite is this spiritual hunger. So why don't we let you go for now, and you can eat up the spirituality we'll be sending your way.
A truly tragic case. Caller clearly
more bound spiritually than physically.
Precisely. Precisely. And we could free him from his bonds, but we can only show him the key and perhaps explain the various knots that were used and in time dissolve them with acids, but we cannot truly free him.
That's right.
I hope the caller will see the light in his own way like I did.
This brings to mind a movement of Bitharianism that I've heard about in my travels, where some people have become so enlightened that they can live without any consumption, without any physical consumption, and live on their spiritual essence and on light and on a sort of internal satisfaction.
Simply to eternally eat their satisfaction.
Yes, I mean, in America, for example, we are all used to having our every single moment filled with food, to, at the slightest hint of unsatisfaction, to be able to fill ourselves physically. But in that same sense, we allow ourselves to become spiritually emptied.
Yeah, I think that the idea of filling oneself with one's pleasure is actually very relevant. Well, why don't we bring in another caller to sort of fill our bellies with the happiness of togetherness? The number is 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
Hello!
Yes, yeah, hello, caller.
Greetings. How are y'all doing tonight?
Thank you, caller. We are just sitting and consuming our pleasure.
Yeah, I'm Jeb Baker. Y'all talking about breathology? I'm up here on my farm up in North Georgia. Yeah, dog! Yeah! And y'all talking about not eating?
No, we're talking about eating, but
Eating spiritual stuff the good Lord gives you.
Or, yeah.
Well, I got a story for y'all that made me stop eating meat. Called out a vegetarian. I went out in my chicken coop one night, and I found a fox had killed my chickens. And I went back, and I said it must be either a possum or a ghost. So I came out there the next night, and again, there was nothing there that was killing my chickens. And I was like, what could it be? So I went out there the third night, and I found out what was killing my chickens, and it sickened me so much that I had to stop eating meat. Do you know what it was?
I would have to guess it was some sort of spiritual death.
No, my brother was having intercourse and killing my chickens.
That's pretty terrible, man.
I tore off meat right after that, brother. I went over to the church and I gave myself up to the Lord, and I became a vegetarian.
That sort of story makes me spiritually hungry.
Yeah.
It's an interesting take on communing with our fellow creature.
Let's bring another voice in to share that experience and something for us to feed and feed others with. Caller, marhaban.
Hey, I just called this number.
Yes, welcome.
Who is this?
You are on Music for Human.
What is that? Some sort of a hotline?
It's a radio show. You're live on the air at the moment.
What? Can you guys tell me, this makes a lot of sense. See, I've been on mescaline for the last 12 days, and I've just been, I guess, just eating shrimp all day, every day, and I have all these missed calls, and I called my girlfriend a lot, and she said that I thought I was a frog for a while, so I don't know if that's what I was talking about, but I don't know, I smell like poop.
No, you just, you called to become spiritually satiated.
Yeah, you referred earlier to spiritual hunger that you really sought to have filled.
But it was misguided, and so we were all trying to lead you to the way to happiness and fulfillment in this regard.
Perhaps your perception of yourself as a frog is bound to your sort of amphibian inside, that you wish to be spiritually filled, but at the moment you're merely feeling yourself physically, and that you wish to experience that transformation.
I think the point there that you make, Aurora, that there is an amphibian desire, is important, because the amphibian, of course, moves from one world to another. There's a transformation that occurs, and from the world of the sea to the land world.
That's fascinating, but I'm gonna go play some skee ball. So, catch you later, suckers.
I think there that we see that desire once again for growth, for achievement.
Yeah, to experience the world with others.
And in another's eye, which is a thing that's only really possible if one gets in better touch with their stonedness.
Yeah, I know what you mean, man.
I weep for the emptiness of our fellow human voices.
For their emptiness. As you felt in the previous caller, and I, even with limited training, I felt a very great distinction between the voice that we heard earlier and this last voice, which presumably was the same person, but one was spiritually void, and the other was spiritually yearning.
Exactly. And to think that his mental state had allowed him to experience his spiritual yearning, and then
it's
he caused himself to forget it.
It's tragic to think that we are so changeable that even from a point of enlightenment or awareness, that we can return to the experience of the little people.
And yet we can be so inelastic, not allowing ourselves to see the world and to mesh ourselves into it. Well, hopefully we are reaching a wider audience through this program, and that people are allowing themselves to think and to understand how void their lives may be.
I've always felt that the sum of our experiences is like a tea that we are emitting flavor into. And I like the tea metaphor because with our personal experiences, you know, we are able to emit so much flavor, but it's to such a small area that is near us. Whereas with this, we are able to emit only a slight amount of flavor, just the littlest taste, but to so many.
And the infusion is mixed with all the colors and all the different various co-hosts, leading to such a delicate and intricate flavor.
I think that just now, as we are close to the end of the program, it would be interesting to hear from each of you if any of the fluids of the body were tea, you know, the, truly an infusion of the personality of the person, what do you think it would be?
The person in general, or?
Well, I'm not sure. Are they all teas? Is it true?
No, no. For instance, the last caller, he sounded kind of more like a soda. You know, I view soda as a very immediate thing. You get your sugar right away, and oftentimes your caffeine, and in the long run, it's not good at all for you. It's quite bad. There have been studies that show it shuts down the immune system temporarily and leads to everything from simple cavities to obesity and all sorts of other diseases. Whereas I think the people in this room, especially the Dr. Fromage, we are a sort of tea. We attempt to be natural and really commune with who we are on multiple levels. It's a beautiful thing.
We tend to blend together quite well when we think this way.
And yet, separately, we also have very strong worth to ourselves and others.
Individualities.
I view it as somewhat of a spiritual odor that we all emit.
Well, I'm so sorry to cut you all short, but unfortunately we've reached the end of our time. So thank you once again, Signor Fromage, and thanks to PCP.
No problem, man.
And to Aurora.
Namaste.
I am Addictor Janis Sakran here with Music for Humans, New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you, every Friday at 7 p.m. here on WMBR 88.1 FM in Cambridge. Stay tuned for Massachusetts Bay and the response. Ma'asalama.
Marta D. Sono un programma a Boston dove poi sente la migliore Jamaican ska. La Bovinskaya Rocksteady, the Generoso Fiero, Tutti Canzone Vecchio, the Jamaica. Mezzanotte a martedì. Sono un programma a Boston dove puoi sentire la migliore Jamaican ska. La Bovine Ska Rocksteady, the Generoso Fiero. Tutti canzone vecchio, the Jamaica. Mezzanotte a martedì. E unico stazione, WMBR, Cambridge.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Massachusetts Bay. This is Gina Badger speaking to you over the airwaves on 88.1 FM, Cambridge. And behind me, you are listening to this week's edition of Field Recordings from Squandam Point Park in Quincy, Massachusetts. And just wanted to remind you, since I haven't really spoken to you in a while, that the best way to listen to this is through some headphones or a nice set of speakers. And